This episode is available to watch as a video podcast exclusively on the Talking Backwards Patreon page. Sign up today over at patreon.com/talkingbackwards.
Welcome back to Talking Backwards, a Twin Peaks podcast. I'm Dave Jackson, joined as always by Patrick Mahan.
Hey, everybody.
And Tyler Mullins.
I am ready.
Ooh. Aren't we all?
We are. I'm certainly ready.
I'm ready for the Pat Stats.
Are you?
Yeah, right off the cuff.
Let's talk about it.
Haul out your boy for some Pat Stats,
This is part 14 of Twin Peaks The Return, a.k.a. Season 3, Episode 14, a.k.a. We Are Like the Dreamer. From Twin Peaks, the limited event series.
And it's so good.
We are like the dreamer who dreams.
Who is the dreamer?
Exactly.
This is a good question that maybe you guys can help me with in a segment later in the show.
Oh.
Dreaming with Patrick.
It's a new segment. Stay tuned.
I'm excited for it. I want to hear about the stream. But first I want to hear about Buckhorn, South Dakota.
Going back to Buckhorn, learning about tulpas. That's my favorite country song.
Going back to Buckhorn, learning about tulpas.
Now, I really like the way this one opens up because Gordon Cole is calling Lucy at the sheriff's station.
Oh, it's so good.
And they immediately recognize each other's voices.
And, like, it's like Cole's put into a fit of PTSD. Like, I forgot what she's like.
I really stepped in it now.
Maybe he was thinking about Bora Bora. Some lost dream, perhaps.
That's true.
She really stuns him.
Yeah, she does.
He just sits there for, like, almost a minute.
Well, it's so good. You can't ask Lucy a simple question.
That's true.
Because you'll get an overcomplicated answer every time.
Yeah.
He just says, Lucy, you've been there this whole time? It's like, well, no, I had days off, like Andy and I went on vacation, we went to Bora Bora.
Like, I want to hear about that story.
I feel like he was giving her room to continue.
Yeah.
Like it was partially, huh.
That's true.
Yeah. It was also like, he doesn't know
more to that story?
Right.
Can I talk now?
But yeah, but then he doesn't press her with any more, any more questions about that. He just moves on to what he's calling him about.
Yeah, he just wants to talk to Sheriff Truman.
Yes.
Yes.
Who he assumes is Harry.
Turns out he's shaven. Right, he's expecting Harry, but he gets Frank Truman, which leads him to ask where Harry is, gets the bad news that he's in the doctor's care, and this obviously saddens him. I feel like Cole never lost his connection to these people. Like, the limited interaction he had in Twin Peaks, I feel like really stuck with him.
Yeah. I wonder if he ever made it back there after, like, you know, Coop's disappearance.
I feel like he would had to have gone back.
Yeah.
Mm. If not for Coop, definitely for Shelley.
Right. Did some fly-ins.
Yeah.
Just an excuse to stop at the Double R.
Yeah. There's no way he went 25 years without stopping back by to see the one girl that makes him want to speak a little French.
He probably also checked in with Harry, but I'm sure he at least told Harry, like, hey, if you hear anything or see anything, just call me. But that hasn't happened till now. Stuff's come up and they're like, well, we need to call Gordon Cole.
I also don't know how much he would have come back because there's zero mention of him and Shelley having had anything.
True.
Throughout the season. Mm-hmm. And we don't know when Bobby took his turn to good boy Bobby from bad boy Bobby.
Right.
So we don't know when he and Shelley, how old is Becky?
We'll just say 25. That's just
no
the
way.
Easy. That's just the easy.
She's 24 max.
That's the easy go-to.
So at most a year. between him and Shelley. But I don't know what his... I just feel like he left his heart in Twin Peaks the way Cooper did. I feel like they are kind of cut from the same
plot. That is interesting, because I once left my heart in El Segundo.
He did.
Your heart?
Yep, yeah. His whole heart.
Is it next to my wallet?
Nope. Not the wallet.
I got to get it.
Yep. Nice Tribe Called Quest. Shout out.
Hit us up.
Yeah.
Tribe Called Quest, you can have that one.
Yep.
Yes.
But they need to talk about the diary pages that Hawk found in the bathroom door stall, which isn't a sentence I've ever said, probably.
Which, I mean, he found those like
forever
two to 3 years ago, it feels like.
Yeah, that was in part 6 when he discovered them. This is part 14.
Jeez. Yeah, it was probably like 10 minutes ago.
We know how time works.
It was enough episodes ago that I was like, why are they initiating this conversation? Like, why is he calling?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, right. There was a breakthrough.
Well, it's possible that Cole's just now returning his call. He could have called him 2 days ago or however many days it's been since part 6 in this series. Cole's been busy. He's got French woman up in his room. Cole's busy.
Cole's busy.
Cole's busy.
Say magnifique.
Très chic.
The diary pages from Laura's diary that Hawk found mentioned the possibility of two Coopers, which is why they needed to get in touch with Gordon Cole's. Like, maybe he could use this. But Cole can't comment on that. But he is appreciative.
It's classified.
Top secret.
There it is. And then just kick it right back to Gordon Cole's room at the makeshift FBI headquarters.
Yeah.
Where we're going to get a little bit of an information dump.
Yeah.
And Albert info dump.
Albert and Tammy?
Albert and Tammy. Yep. Talking about one or two Lois Duffys.
Yes.
The new name to us.
It is.
Talking about an old case that he had heard about or been on, and they were doing an arrest on this Lois Duffy woman. I forget what the crime would have been for.
A murder.
Did she do a murder?
A murder most foul.
She murdered herself.
I guess.
I mean, yeah.
But, okay, so this is an old case of Gordon Cole and Philip Jeffries.
And that's the prequel series I want. I yeah. need it. Yeah, I want the 70s Cole and Jeffries.
I would love
Blue Rose.
The Blue Rose series.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
But was she already shot or did they end up shooting? I think they came in and she was already dying.
Yeah.
Lois Duffy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she shared some final words.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike the Blue Rose.
Yes. And
I had to watch this several times because Albert's like, her last words, unlike the Blue Rose, she smiles. And I thought that was it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, unlike the Blue Rose, she smiles. That's a thinker.
So you heard unlike.
Yes.
Because I
heard I'm like.
I heard I am like.
I did not hear that.
Yeah.
I'm like.
Which it could be unlike. But I feel like it's I'm like, because I would better explain.
That's true.
He is mumbling.
Right.
A little bit, speaking a little lower than we're used to. And so the delivery isn't completely.
Not something you want everyone to hear.
Right. Yeah. And he's keeping it down.
Yeah.
So her having said, I'm like the Blue Rose, and then disappearing. And then in the corner is another Lois Duffy, the person who had just been talking. And so he asks Tammy what she makes of this. And she kind of solves it the way the Adam West Batman solves Riddler clues.
And that's when I said, oh, she's going to say doppelganger.
Yeah.
No. Not at all.
She goes, the Blue Rose doesn't occur in nature.
Right.
Well, he asks her, he tells her this story and he's like, what's the one question you need to ask me?
Right. Like, what is the Blue Rose?
Which I wish she had asked the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Because that would have been fitting of Tamara Preston.
So what's the one question you need to ask me?
When's lunch?
Wrong. Ask again.
But yeah, she knows a wild amount about Blue Roses, mm-hmm. which don't exist. So how do you know about them?
Right. Well, they're manufactured. They don't occur in nature. So the person was obviously manufactured and doesn't occur in nature. She's a tulpa.
Has to be.
I cue the sound of a million keyboards Googling tulpa. Yep.
Agent Ivy gave us that. She was like, everyone Googled tulpa that night after this episode aired.
All right, so I actually looked up some definitions for tulpa myself.
How many you got?
I have three. According to Wikipedia, the World's Dictionary, tulpa is a concept in mysticism and the paranormal of being or object which is created through spiritual or mental powers. It was adapted by the 20th century theosophists.
From you Tibetan. Want to try that like a couple of different ways?
No, I think I nailed it.
Okay. I don't know what it is. Did you look that up?
Can you look up more definitions? definitions of definitions.
Theosophists. I guess just like people who study...
Theosophists.
Study religions, maybe. From the Tibetan...
Theologians.
From the Tibetan Spurpa.
Of course, it's connected to Tibet. Cooper loves Tibet.
Cooper loves Tibet.
That's so Cooper.
And that original word means emanation or manifestation. Dictionary.com says tulpa is a being or object that is created in the imagination by visualization technique, such as in Tibetan mysticism. And from How Stuff Works, tulpas are entities, quote-unquote, generated entirely in the mind, and some believe tulpas think on their own, experience emotions, and have memories.
Memory.
Nothing about gold balls?
Nothing about gold balls. And that's why I have a little bit of beef, but we can discuss that at the end of the episode if you prefer.
I'm talking about it now.
I got beef.
Asterisk.
That's good.
Yeah, so put a pin on that. Coffee time.
Oh, ooh, hell yeah. We did not talk about the window cleaner.
That is
immediately next.
Coffee time is my damn fine line, by the way. I love it. It's a great gif. Love everything about it.
Coffee time.
Damn fine.
Yeah, let's talk about the window cleaner.
Yeah.
First of all, he's terrible at it.
Before this, Gordon says Diane's on her way. And that's when the weird stuff starts happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he comes in and says, coffee time. And Diane's on her way.
Yeah.
And then as if he was sent in like a stealth assault, this window wiper comes out of nowhere.
Gordon Cole's also the only one who notices it.
Mm-hmm. Well, how could he not?
That we see. I know, but we don't see anyone else reacting to it.
Right.
Well, and he's so disoriented, he forgot how his hearing aid works because he like turns it up.
Yeah.
And then down. Yeah. And
so it's like messing with the frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, he gets
also very monkey-like.
Yeah.
The whole thing is, I thought it was a monkey doing the window washing. The way the shadow is, I'm not even kidding. It was Jack.
And then it started to sound like a hoot.
Yeah.
A monkey hoot.
Yeah. Monkey hoot. A classic monkey hoot.
A hoot. A monkey hoot. Yeah, this guy comes in, and it's like he's attacking Gordon Cole with this wiper sound. Because, one, he does it dry.
Yeah.
Well,
no spray whatsoever.
He's just doing...
Yeah, just like wild, arbitrary motions. Maximum squeal.
That's what you get for saying Diane.
That's right. Maybe he's a tulpa.
It's scary. It scared me.
Yeah, because what's going on?
Yeah.
And nobody
Why
cares.
Why is this happening? It seems like it can only be an intentional event. Like he was sent to, in this way, hurt or disorient Cole.
Maybe That's Cole is the, like it, the cleaner.
Is he
the window?
Who is the cleaner?
I think it's
an assassin.
I think it's Jack from What Would Jack Do?
Yes.
If he's really moving like a monkey, hooting like a monkey. No, because he just blasts in to the only open, like, visible window.
Right.
Like, without blinds. Blasts into that window, dry squeegees it, and then takes off. It was like a hit.
Yeah.
Like, he was just sent in to do a hit.
Yeah.
And they knew that would get to Gordon Cole that way. If he hadn't adjusted his hearing aid quickly enough, it could have done real damage to him.
Yeah. Maybe that's what helped him remember his dream here in a few minutes.
Maybe. Oh, it's aggressive.
It is. Diane.
But yeah, Diane comes in, and they start asking her more questions, asking if when she last saw Cooper, if he ever mentioned Major Briggs. And she clearly doesn't want to talk about Cooper, but finally gives it up that, yeah, he did, of course, mention Briggs. They ask her further about the ring that was found in Garland Briggs' stomach that says, "With love, from Jeannie E."
Which, Jeannie,
if you remember, she missed all of that because she decided to stay in the waiting room
right, yeah.
at the morgue. If she had gone with him, she would have found out this information a little bit sooner, mm-hmm. but she was the only one that stayed back.
Well, she was staying back to stealth text.
Right, exactly.
As you do.
Yeah, so she didn't know what they knew.
Yeah.
So this is kind of getting dropped on her. We learned that her half-sister's name is Jeannie E.
They're estranged.
She hates her. Yeah, I like that.
That's a great delivery.
I got a little escalation. We're estranged.
Yeah.
I hate her.
So, yeah, so that she didn't go to the wedding. Mm-hmm. Guessing she's never seen a photo of them together, because wouldn't you know that that looks a little like Cooper?
Yeah. Seems like it would have come up.
I guess they're not sharing Christmas cards.
I mean, had she... I would assume Jeannie E. married Dougie since they stopped talking.
It's very possible, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, but then how does she know?
She only could have, because if Dougie was manufactured by Bad Coop, then it would have been...
But she knows that...
Post-Diane.
His name's Dougie, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I just... Where she got that information?
Well, you know, mom calls and updates you on...
Yeah.
Updates you on stuff.
Mama Evans. That's right.
Did you hear Jeannie E's getting hitched? No, Mom.
Shut up.
Douglas Jones is his name.
We call him Dougie.
We Everybody call calls him Dougie.
Who would play Mama Evans in the show?
I wouldn't.
Loris Leachman.
Oh, R.I.P.
Yeah. She would have played her, though.
Yeah.
Oh, this is where Cole calls the Las Vegas FBI office to find a...
Cole has Tammy call.
Well, yeah, but he gets on the phone. She just dials the number.
Ah, yes. Why couldn't he dial it?
Yeah.
Because he's a badass.
You're right.
Wants him to find all the Douglas Jones in the Las Vegas area.
There are 23.
It's a lot of DJs.
So yeah, Randall Headley and his little buddy Wilson are in the Las Vegas FBI office.
And our second Wilson of the series.
Mm-hmm. Wait, who was the first one?
Tyler and I discovered this. Agreed. You missed the live stream, this particular live stream of this episode.
I did.
So we watched this episode and One Armed Man in the same night. Mm-hmm. And One Armed Man, that's right, and One Armed Man from season one, there is a guy that works for like the...
The prison.
Yeah, where Hank is.
He's taking Norma to see Hank.
Yeah.
For and his parole hearing.
That guy's credited as Wilson. Like, so he's not, because Tyler goes, is that Walter? Because he's with Norma.
Right.
So no, he's Wilson. And I was like, oh, well, that's another Wilson. So that led us into discovering another double.
Astounding production.
That's great production.
Okay, yeah, surprise Wilson double.
Yeah, surprise.
Neat. But they're tasked with finding Douglas Jones in Las Vegas. There are 23.
How are we gonna
find the right one? Right.
Wilson! How many times have I told you? This is what we do in the FBI!
So good.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
It's so good.
Can I have two damn fine lines?
I mean, do you want to?
Yep.
Stealsies.
I'm stealing one of yours.
Wilson, how many times have I told you? This is what we do in the FBI.
I'm fine.
Oh, okay. Stolen.
Suck ass. You're not quick enough. I steal your damn fine lines.
I steal your fine line.
So that was an amazing scene.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
There's no reason it should be that fun.
No.
But it's that fun.
It's so great.
It's so aggressive, and it's out of nowhere.
Also, the way he's hitting it almost feels like sped up. There's like a moment where it feels just not...
Yeah, it's definitely like off.
Yeah.
That's true.
Like the woodsman hitting.
It's exactly like that. That's exactly what I thought of, was the kind of reversal of like hitting and then coming up. And
yeah,
it definitely felt very like out of time.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to talk about the fact that Gordon Coles had another Monica Bellucci dream.
Not the first.
Not the first. And
he's had another one.
We've all had a Monica Bellucci dream.
Haven't we?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, one other thing, I guess, because I just saw in my notes. Gordon, I got the impression Gordon thinks, at least, or is putting off the impression that he thinks Dougie killed Briggs and Ruth.
Yes.
From that conversation, because they don't know he's Coop yet.
Mm.
He's like, because they're armed and dangerous, is what he says about.
Right.
But he Dougie and Jeannie.
But that also could have been just to add a sense of urgency. Like, I can't really explain why I need to find this person.
Could be.
Like, we don't have time to talk about tulpas or doppelgangers.
Right.
Let's just say they're armed and dangerous,
mm-hmm.
and I need to know where they are.
Yeah.
Seems like a quick fix.
Yeah.
But yeah, Cole's having a Monica Bellucci dream. She's looking full. Which Matrix was she in? Was it the second one? Reloaded?
Yeah, she's in Reloaded.
Reloaded?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with the Merovingian, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Looking full Matrix Reloaded here.
Yep.
We got there. So they meet at a cafe, and she's brought some friends.
Don't recognize any of these people.
Yeah, all completely new people. Nobody even has a passing resemblance to anyone else we've ever seen.
I feel like that should have been more important. Like, that's...
Maybe it is.
I mean, yeah, maybe it should have been more important, but I've also had details in dreams that were completely inconsequential.
What were they?
I mean, I've since forgotten because they were inconsequential. Like, it tracks because if you're half remembering a dream to somebody, like, you mention things just because it was a part of it, but it doesn't necessarily play into the bigger story of it.
Yeah, that's true.
But also, Cooper was there, but he couldn't see his face.
Yes.
Which I thought was interesting because it shows a shot of him, and you can clearly tell.
Of that, Cooper?
Yeah. You can clearly tell it's Cooper, but it only like cuts him off from like the top of his lip.
Oh yeah.
It's like there's no mistaking that chin.
Of course.
Yeah. Chin McLaughlin over here.
But then Chin Monica McLaughlin. Bellucci has some tears running down her face.
Yeah. Did notice that.
She gets emotional.
Yeah, she seems distraught.
She said the ancient phrase, "You're like the dreamer who dreams and then lives inside the dream."
The ancient phrase.
The ancient Chinese secret.
We've all heard it before.
That old adage.
But who is the dreamer?
I love this scene.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's like he had this, like Lynch had this idea for just another art house.
Well, he just wanted to work with Monica Bellucci.
Well, yeah.
Who wouldn't? Yeah. But also they flew everyone to Paris just to shoot this.
For even, like a 2-hour shoot.
Even Kyle. Whose face is cut off.
Free trip to Paris? Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
But and I don't have to work?
But it is...
Yeah.
The location, too, the, like, little coffee shop that they're sitting at or whatever this, like, you know, they're outside is, like, cafe. Next to this art gallery that... I don't know if it's still
open,
but... No, but it's, like, a David Lynch... Like, he has a place there of, like, art. I think it's his place. I believe that's what it is. But either way, like, you can... I think you can see it, like, in maybe one of the wider shots at the beginning when they're... entering the dream.
Yeah.
But I thought that was interesting. I was like, oh, well, that's why this is probably one of his favorite spots, like in Paris. And he's I'm going to go shoot here.
Yeah, we completely glossed over that. The dream takes place in Paris.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Just forgot to drop that in there.
On a case. He was in Paris on a case.
Mm.
Yes.
And then.
On a case of French women.
Yes. No, he just met up with Monica.
A whole case of French women. Très chic.
There's a whole case of them.
Yeah.
But I love this scene. Like, it's one, it's just a really good dream sequence.
Yeah.
I love the logic of it. And this statement kind of sums up it, not this season, but this series. It's like everything is just dream logic this whole time. Like, in like, we as viewers are like dreamers living inside the dream. Like, if we want to take all these things as facts of the story and try to make sense of it, then it's like people without sense trying to make sense out of things that don't make sense.
Correct.
And then if we're in the dream, then who is the dreamer? It's like if we're in this artificial world, then who made it? Because we're at their mercy.
Probably Leonardo DiCaprio.
Probably Leonardo DiCaprio.
Anyway, Monica looked past Cole.
Yep.
He saw himself from long ago in the old Philadelphia office.
This is so amazing.
Great footage from Firewalk with Me here.
Oh, yeah. My God. Yeah. That's just awesome. Just a goose, because you know, I spent like an hour breaking down the Jeffrey scene in Missing Pieces. So seeing this again, I'm pretty sure if I wasn't already standing up, because there were many times in the return where I jumped off my couch seeing it the first time. Like I stood up. I was like clapping. Like, what are we doing? What is going on?
I missed it when we watched the movie, and in any other time we've seen the scene. Like, it was just this time I noticed when he being Philip Jeffries, comes into the office, and we hear Gordon Cole say, like, Cooper, meet the late, the long lost Philip Jeffries. Just the smile that comes on David Bowie's face.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's me.
Here I am.
Like, you got it. Before he goes into his thing about Judy.
Yeah, before breaking down.
And it's a great callback. Like, and I don't know if this was playing the entire time, if it was a retcon, but him pointing at Cooper there and say, who do you think that is there? Yeah.
I think that was definitely always intentional, but it just makes it so greater, especially being this far into this season, seeing this now.
Yeah.
I feel like just made it that much better for me because... Yeah, it's like, it was already weird because that scene, something about it felt out of time or dreamlike because Cooper wasn't Boop yet, you know? And he was already, even from the missing pieces, he's like, he doesn't know, he's confused that it's 1989.
Right.
You know, so that it's like, well, time travel's at play.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, this is... very bizarre.
Jeffries has definitely been slipping through time and has kind of seen what will be.
And even just the way, like, Albert here, current Albert, is like, I'm starting to remember that too. Felt very much like the Mitchum's Pie scene where I said, is Dougie changing the dream right now? I was like, man, is Jeffries doing this, like, right now? And because it's happening right now in time, like, is their dream changing? Like, they're starting to remember it because he's just going back and doing that now. You know what I mean? Like, and where we're seeing it.
Well, and it's not the first instance that we're going to have, and not the last, of, like, almost like a stopgap having been removed, where, like, suddenly things are being remembered or details are coming back to somebody.
Yeah, this is weird to me, I feel like, because they just all of a sudden, well, Albert says, I had not remembered that. And then they all remember. Which is weird. This shared.
It's like, I'm starting to remember that too.
Like a cloud has been lifted or something.
Because they shared the dream and.
Yeah. So I don't, like, were they suppressed or had they actually forgotten?
That's why I was saying,
it's
like,
kinda how it feels, right?
That's how I was taking it, as like it was happening, that the dream was changing in this moment. Like, they were starting to remember it, and Jeffries was literally like
just
going back.
Yeah.
Like, just at this point in time. This is the time that they're remembering it.
True.
I know that gets very, there's a lot of layers there. It gets very, even me trying to think about it feels dreamlike because I'm just like trying to put the pieces together. Like, wait, is he doing this? Is he doing this? I don't know.
Oh, I got a question.
Shoot.
Y'all want some sandwiches?
Roast beef and cheese for me.
I'll have just cheese.
Who ordered just cheese? Now, yeah, we're lining up some sandwiches. Somebody ordered just cheese.
Just cheese. Just cheese.
I forget whose that was.
On rye.
Ooh, yeah. I like that. There we go.
Brie on a baguette for me, thanks.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we're laying out some sandwiches in the conference room at the Twin Peaks Sheriff's Station. I guess Chad smells sandwiches and comes in.
It's almost, they obviously, like, were planning
laid the bait.
Yeah. But it seems like they're like, oh, Chad, let's go get some sandwiches.
Yeah.
And then they walk in, and then quick draw Mahawk. McHawk is like, all right.
Quick draw Mahawk.
That's too good.
Just instantly pulls out his gun.
Yeah.
Which is very unprofessional.
Well, how do you stop a Chad?
I don't know.
With a gun.
One leg at a time.
I've seen him shoot. The shooting range in the basement.
Yes, you have.
And while reciting poetry, the most manly thing.
Wrote that for my girlfriend.
Oh, what if? What if he just rattled that off and then blind fired into the shooting range? Oh. Like, I wouldn't have even cared if it hit anything.
That's true. What if he wrote the poem, put that on the hanging thing, sent it out, and then dotted all the I's?
I was going to say just dotted a signature at the end, but yeah, that works too.
Oh my God.
Anyway, fuck Chad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was clapping here as well. Just happy to see it.
You're making a big mistake.
Huge.
They've been following him for a while.
Yeah. They've had their eye on him. They knew he was crooked, and now they have evidence.
He's a crooked cop.
It was that letter from Miriam
Webster.
Hodges?
Or is Hodges the wrong one?
I can't remember.
One of them. Was it Walker and Hodges? Is that the two names?
Maybe. Sullivan. Miriam Sullivan and Miriam Hodges. Miriam Hodges was on the letter. It's all coming back to me.
Not Walker.
Not Walker, Texas Ranger.
I wish. But now Chad gets taken away.
Chuck Norris comes in, gives him a roundhouse kick to the face.
Oh, perfect.
Face kick. Be great.
Pulled him off. Frank actually ordered the roast beef. My man.
Yeah.
Very, very good.
That makes sense.
I love that Chad is on his way to not only be incarcerated, but just tortured.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Passively.
Amazing.
Passively. It's gonna be good.
Some long nights ahead and days.
Ready to take a walk in the woods?
I'm so ready.
I guess. They pull up to the woods just on the side of the road, mm-hmm. and they walk through the woods to a road. That has to end somewhere.
Do you not know how roads work in Twin Peaks Woods?
No, this is dumb.
What?
Just drive there.
What tripped me up was they're packed like they're going on an overnight.
That's true. Like, well, you never know.
Everybody's got a full backpack.
Yeah. You know how they know how long people get lost in these woods. Look at Jerry.
Nobody's looking for Jerry.
Cooper's been missing.
Looking for Jerry.
Cooper's been missing for 25 years. Nobody, in these woods.
Nobody cares about Jerry's whereabouts except maybe HEPA.
Ooh. His Jerabouts.
Jerabouts. Man.
Yeah, what's in the backpacks?
I don't know, but I need one.
Yeah, I'd like one.
They're cool backpacks.
Yeah.
Gonna need some of those.
I even like fumbled it around in my head, like maybe there's like astronaut blankets or something in there in case it got cold overnight. But if that was the case, then that would have come into play later. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they eventually find it.
They find the spot.
Apparently, it's just a dead ass tree stump.
Jackrabbit's Palace is a dead ass tree stump.
That's right.
There's actually a couple of really cool details here.
The Briggs men.
What?
Sitting around. Making up great tall tales.
Another prequel series I'd like to see.
Yeah, I want to hear those tall tales.
Yeah, you too.
But probably the reason that there's a road in the woods is this is filmed at Olali State Park. And it's lovely.
Bobby tells them to put soil in their pockets. Or Hawk.
Yeah, Hawk does.
Which is weird.
So I don't think it's weird. But
I think it's weird because... First of all, Hawk hasn't been there.
Yeah.
How does he know the protocol?
Well, the protocol was in Briggs's note.
Oh, okay.
That was in the, what do you call it?
In the steel rod.
The bar. Yeah, the rod.
Yeah.
There's a very cool shot of the tree stump that just the way it's framed and the way the shot looks. I saw a really cool comparison photo of that with the tower at the beginning of season 3,
from the mauve zone.
Yeah,
the mauve avenger.
Yeah, just the way that it's framed and the way this thing looks, it's almost the exact same shape.
Yeah,
as the building in the mauve zone, which I thought was neat.
That is neat
because we get more connections with that.
Yeah,
in the scene.
Yeah, and still talking about the Briggs men. Bobby was told not to come out to this place alone.
He told him to never wander mm-hmm. around there without him.
Right.
And look what he's doing. Disobeying his father.
He's going back to his roots.
Well, to this day.
But they're also not wandering. They have a destination.
Yeah. They have to go here. His dad told him to.
I don't know.
And like you said, yeah, Hawk reminds everybody to put dirt in their pockets. And soil. And he's just on board. So just a quick story for me to relate to this. Like my logic for this is...
Logic?
I was in a band a long time ago and we...
Travis Friday?
No, it was after Trap Travis Friday.
Trap Travis Saturday?
Fare thee well.
I remember.
We were moderately successful.
I'm starting to remember that.
I'm starting to remember that too.
I'm starting to remember as well. But our rehearsal space was one of our guys' church buildings. And I learned the layout pretty well. And around Halloween, I put together almost a connect the dots sort of game where I just left notes laying around places, like guide people to different parts of the church. Like we kept the lights off. I confiscated everyone's phones and had them like follow this series of clues through the building, like spooky clues.
Spooky, ooky.
And one of them was in one of the like chapel rooms. The clue was like kneel at the altar for whatever reason. And everybody like lined up. All you had to do was look down. Like it was just there on the ground. But one of the guys in the group was like, we have to kneel. Everybody get down. You have to kneel. Just on board because they were in the game so hard. It's like, that's the level at which Hawk is in this game.
That's true.
He's like, we got to put the dirt in our pockets. We're in this.
Gotta.
We're here.
Just gotta.
We're doing it. It's like, that's just how I related to.
That's
like him being so on board.
Yeah.
They reach the coordinates and there's just this sort of mist hovering around the area.
Mist?
Mist.
I want to check that out.
Or fog.
Ooh, yeah.
Fog.
Fog. And flashing.
Someone's out there with a fog machine. Yeah. Oh, yeah, there is.
A fog machine and a strobe light.
You get the fog shot?
No fog today. Man, that'd be great.
So there's the remnants.
Take forever to clear out.
There's the remnants of a local metalcore band here. And off to the side is a... just a flailing sort of.
Not Dido.
Not Dido.
Are you sure?
Nido.
Nido, yes.
I guess.
The eyeless woman from the beginning of the series, on the ground, naked, trying to speak, just kind of rolling around. And the time is now 2:53. And
same time from part three as well.
Mm-hmm. So here's two references back to part three. And then a vortex shows up in the sky and takes Andy because to the black and white room.
And it takes Andy because he's the only one that didn't have meat on a sandwich.
I guess. I mean, it's 2:53.
What?
Also, I think it takes Andy.
It's our pure boy.
Well, I guess that's the qualifier, but I don't think he would have gone had he not let go of Dido.
Also true. I think that as well.
Yeah.
Because I think she's trying to hang on to him, and he, like, I think there's a little fight between their hands. Mm. Like, she's trying to keep him, and he.
Well, there's fear in letting go.
Not for me.
I would have thought it was because he was holding Naito's hand that kind of bridged the gap. Because she was from this place he's going.
Was she?
Right?
Yeah. I mean, we've seen that they're connected.
Mm-hmm.
Have we?
Okay. Let's go back to part eight.
So in part eight,
we see the camera panning over the purple sea. Up to the giant's lair.
What?
that's the connection.
I see. Cool.
So I wasn't sure how to label this location, so I said White Lodge question mark?
I was going to bring that up. I'm so glad you said that, because I'm surprised no one said it until now and wondered if this was the White Lodge, because mm-hmm. that was definitely something I thought for sure, and especially with this not puddle of mud, it's white. You know, a circle mm-hmm. that she's laying by. I just kind of thought, oh, This made me think it more, though. Mm-hmm. I was already thinking it a little bit, just loosely, because we don't know. We're not told. We're also not told what the Black Lodge really is. Waiting room, Black Lodge, right. Whatever.
It would make sense that the Black Lodge has an oily pool.
Right.
To get to it.
Oil pool. Yeah.
An oil pool.
And this one's a little more like, isn't it? It's definitely white, but it's kind almost of got like gold.
It's got a gold mix. It's almost like smelted? Is that the...
Smelted, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Like
just
molten.
Some ore that's just melted.
Yeah.
So I'm so glad you said that, because I really didn't want to bring it up, but I have it here.
Yeah, so.
Maybe it's nickel.
but even still, I have it, White Lodge, ?
Sure.
White Lodge?
Yeah, and yeah.
I just had it.
Is this it?
I'm okay with calling it the White Lodge, if you want.
I am just too. Had
Lock
it
in.
As
Andy, Lock it in.
Andy reappears in a black and white setting to sit down with at his dinner with Andre the Trench.
Now we finally get a name for 7 question marks.
Fireman.
Yeah.
Yes.
Putting out fires.
Left and right.
Yep. No, then this device appears in Andy's hands.
Yeah.
That it's like a... I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. I've never seen anything like it.
I mean, it's just a...
it's like...
diffuser.
Yeah, like an incense burner or something.
Yeah.
It's in the shape of, like, if you're at a, like, Italian place and you get your stuff to go and they wrap it up in foil. It's like that fold over and twist at the top.
Oh, yeah.
It's a strangely shaped thing. It almost looks like it's made of wood. And it just emits this smoke that drifts up above Andy's head, which causes him to look up and see the secrets of the universe.
I guess
that was my favorite thing you texted me when you first watched this episode, because I knew that was coming, and that this was such a insane moment to see Andy in this, because you would never think to see him in one of these settings.
But of course it's Andy,
right? Yeah, when you text me that, you're like, of course Andy gets the secrets to the universe.
Yeah, this just like pure soul,
yeah,
who's so open to everything. Of course he's the one who gets this universal information dump.
Yeah.
And seems to understand completely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the weird part.
I wish he would have left that place, come out and said, like,
I don't know what just happened.
Yeah, I've been still being confused. I love that he's not, though. I love that he's confident in what he's saying.
Yeah.
With no questioning his, you know, what just happened, while everyone else is. Mm-hmm. He's confident, to the point, unlike mostly what we see of Andy, and I love it.
Yeah, we should run down through just a couple of the highlights that he gets to see.
Oh, yeah.
First off, Treylan.
Yeah. The white figure vomiting Bob.
Yeah.
He does see
Got a Light.
Yes, we get the woodsman at the convenience store, and then we get Got a Light.
Mm-hmm.
We get the girl running through the courtyard.
Yeah. Second time we've seen it in The Return.
From the very beginning of the series.
Yeah, they showed it to us at the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Which is weird. I know that's not important. I just know it. But then we get a nice glimpse of La Palma.
And
La Palma.
Framed by angels.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, I think the whole purpose of the courtyard girl is that sticks in your mind. Like, that's a memorable shot.
I guess. And I mean,
I always tie it to...
It's no more memorable than Dunk Jangle. They should have just showed that.
But I don't know, that to me is like it's like the avatar for everyone's emotions in that moment. Like when everybody finds out that a friend or a classmate has died, then it's a bad feeling. And I think she's just the personification of that bad feeling.
That person's also out of time because she found out before everyone else.
Mm. Right. Maybe that's young Naito. I stand Dido.
So we get a glimpse of Dido here. Then we get a
Naito.
Boop coop separation. Got to keep them separated.
Yep. Boop coop separation. You do got to keep them separated. One of the weirder shots to me is Andy walking Lucy to an indeterminate spot in the sheriff's station.
But she's I think she's more distraught than disoriented.
Yeah. She's looking. In my first watch, she's looking two directions.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought seeing the Coop and Boop that she was looking at them.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it's like he's...
Because she is. He's like, hey, come look at this.
Yeah, it's like he's motioning her to a single direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we get another Dido shot. Then we get...
We didn't talk about the pole.
That's okay. It.
And then we get the pole.
And we get the pole.
Well, immediately after the Lucy scene, there's a shot of Andy's face that's really effective to me, where he's, you know, blinking backwards. But
oh, right.
The look on his face is really emotional. And I don't know what the emotion is. I can't tell if it's worry or sadness or just confusion.
I don't.
Maybe Wally Brando died.
Don't you dare.
Don't you put that on me.
Maybe he tried to go into a controlled slide on his hog.
I don't think it's in the BTS, but there is a lot of stuff where you see David Lynch directing and telling people, you know, especially in like the Red Room scenes, like how to feel and stuff. And I would love to see him directing Harry in this scene, just being like telling him what to feel and what emotions feel, because you know he's not seeing this stuff when he's there acting.
Right.
So that would be very interesting.
And he's not telling him what it means either.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
No, I thought that shot of his face was very effective.
Yeah, I agree.
It's right after that scene with Lucy, and it's just like, man, what is he feeling in this moment?
Right, yeah. Just because she's involved in the images that he's saying, yeah, I'm sure that's very... There's no telling what he's feeling.
Right.
That's true.
Probably a lot of things.
Yeah.
I didn't think about him blinking backwards, but that makes sense, because is everything he does in that backwards?
Yes.
Like, is he...
Pretty much, yeah. And we don't ever hear him speak here.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought of it more as his weird blinks, which now knowing that they were backwards, as being like almost shutter type to like capture and remember everything that's happening.
Oh, I like that a lot.
That's interesting too.
Yeah.
That's very good. Yeah.
Actually, I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's definitely in reverse, but the cadence of it is kind of like stuttered.
And yeah.
It could be something very much like that. That's really cool. Wow. Yeah. I just like that a lot.
And then a weird shot of the stupid telephone pole through the years. Let's see how it's aged.
What's to report? It's the same.
Yeah. The number is still the number 6 on
it. Yeah.
It is a different background location than what we've seen before, though.
Is it?
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, it can't be the only telephone pole with the number 6 on it in the continental U.S.
Maybe they moved the pole.
I mean, if there's anything I know about Twin Peaks, there are at least 2 poles. So.
She had 2 poles.
She's had 2
poles.
Poles. So to round this out.
The device just kind of sucks all the smoke back in.
Yeah. Just back up in there.
Then he starts breathing heavily.
Yeah, and rapidly.
Yeah.
I really expected the fireman to say more after that.
No.
Like,
do you get everything? It? No, he only talks to Cooper. He says things to Cooper. He gives Andy the secrets of the universe.
Like, and hold on, the backwards stuff. So, like, yeah, Andy is in reverse in this scene.
Yeah.
Have we seen anybody else in forward motion
besides Cooper
in a lodge beside Cooper? Like, even was it Wyndham Earl even in reverse?
He was reverse, yep.
Dougie too,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I've never thought about it till now about Andy, his stuff being backwards, because I haven't thought about it, even though it clearly is. I haven't thought about it because he doesn't speak backwards. He's not talking backwards.
Right.
The name of the podcast.
Find us on
patreon.com/talkingbackwards. And just
throw them up.
Get some cool merch, live streams, early episodes.
If we ever meet, you'll get a hug.
And a cookie.
No. So yeah, we're back at the dead ass tree stump. And people just start to fade in, wandering around.
I put down that the crew seems to have to find themselves in pieces to get back to solid. It's very similar to the shot of the convenience store with the woodsman walking around, but it's not all electrified. They're just kind of these several ghostly sort of pieces of themselves walking back and forth until they all are just there and solid.
Yeah.
And nobody knows what just happened.
Right.
That's true. Is that the starting, is that starting positions from
yeah, when? It is, yeah.
It is, okay. So,
so they just like,
almost like everything kind of, they started there, went, and then just reversed
back yeah, to, back there, yeah.
Except Andy.
Right.
I wonder if that's just how they kind of get lost in time. Like their essence is just kind of spread out and kept displaced until
Andy's comes
things
back.
Resume.
Right.
And then they're right back in the moment. Yeah. Like,
because I'm sure
seconds
it's
past.
Yeah, because I'm sure it's still 2:53.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no way it's not.
No doubt it's the same minute and they come back.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, Andy brings Naito out wrapped in his jacket.
Mm-hmm. And he's very, very sure of himself.
Very take charge.
Yes.
Wrapped in jacket.
He says that she's very important and there are people who want her dead, so they need to keep her safe.
Man.
And she's wrapped in his jacket. What's in the backpacks? If there's not a blanket in there, then what's in the backpacks? I'm hung up on it.
Extra sandwiches.
That could be.
All cheese.
Yeah. Donuts.
Go nuts. Do we go straight to the gel cell?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's where they're going to keep her safe.
Yes. And you can never be safer than in a fluffy pink robe. And hear about Lucy and Andy's sexcapades.
Wait, what?
That, yeah, that's what I say, understood that's, them
I,
to
I
be.
Took that as well, yeah. What is the, what do they say? What's the exchange there?
I don't remember, but they're like, do you remember the, like, talking about those pajamas? And very suggestively, Andy's like, do you remember the last time you wore
it? It was definitely.
You know, it was.
And they giggle. They giggle about
talking
it,
about yeah. him just giving it to her.
Hard.
I misremembered the scene, apparently.
Do you remember that night, Andy?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. And then they look like there's a look.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And she's like smiling as she walks out of the cell.
Like, it's a good thing Naito doesn't have any eyes.
Naito.
Naito.
Because.
Naito.
This is Naito.
I'm never going to say it. Never going to say it.
Naito is the flapper girl.
Yeah.
Is there a Naito on the show?
Yeah, Senorita Naito.
Senorita Naito.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
With the fireman.
I see. That's why you keep correcting me.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, of course, Chad's harassing Andy through the bars. Telling him he's no kind of cop.
Yeah, and then this dude with a fucked up face.
Yeah.
Just mocks Chad.
Old bloody mouth.
Yeah.
Well, he's, I don't know if he's intentionally mocking, but he just repeats everything everyone says.
He repeats everything.
Or does.
Everything Chad says.
Everyone around
well,
him.
Well, I guess.
Because he repeats Naito, too.
He does repeat Naito.
Naito starts hooting.
Yeah. Yeah, why don't Andy and Lucy take care of him? Wrap him up
know.
In any.
Maybe
any
they didn't blanket. Know he was there. Maybe they can't see him. Maybe he's not really there.
Want him to get blood on the robe?
Whoa.
Yeah, they don't acknowledge him. Chad's the only one that ever interacts with him.
We never saw him get brought in either.
No, we never saw him come in though.
What if nobody else can see him?
That's what I think. I think Chad's, I think he's a figment of Chad's imagination.
I was more concerned with why does he have this like string tied around his face?
Yeah. So it's keeping yeah. a, it's keeping
yeah.
a patch
yeah.
on his cheek.
Yeah.
But wouldn't you just tape it?
Right.
Wouldn't you just tape that on?
After you clean your face off?
Yeah.
I mean, what the? He's nobody. He's not there.
Mm-hmm. I feel like those are the two biggest theories about this dude. Is it's either a figment of Chad's imagination or it's Billy.
It is Billy.
It's got to be Billy.
It's got to be Billy.
But is Billy of this world?
Not a chance.
And
nobody does first aid like that.
There's definitely more discussion on that.
Yeah.
I don't want to go to the next.
Well, let's not go to the next scene yet, because I do want to touch on a couple points. So I have him noted as Bloody Mouth, but we can call him Bloody Billy, I guess.
Bloody Billy.
Ooh, Bloody Boy Billy.
Bloody Boy Billy. He's repeating those around him, like everything seemingly repeats.
Sure.
In this series. Which I think is neat.
Is he a minor bird?
He may be the
Waldo reincarnate.
He may be the new Waldo. But he also seemingly has two black eyes, like he's been lobotomized.
Owl eyes?
Owl eyes, real eyes, real lies. But yeah, the repetition just escalates until Chad flips.
Yeah, it's a breaking point.
Why don't you shut up?
It's so gross. He's so gross to look at. Chad and this guy.
Both, yeah. Billy for sure, though. I don't like it.
And I'm sorry, Tyler, but we do have to go to this scene.
Back to the Great Northern.
Meanwhile.
Outside. It's night outside the Great Northern. I'm guessing this is the back loading dock.
It's a good guess.
Some guy is trying to open walnuts, but keeps obliterating them.
Time out.
Let's take a time out.
20-second challenge.
No chance. There's no chance.
For a 9-minute scene. We haven't done a 20-second challenge since season 2. That's a challenge.
It can be done.
Can we get the timer? Dave was not ready for that.
I will 20-second challenge Freddy's story when we get there.
But you really want to deep dive on James's birthday?
I really want to get deep on James's birthday. anyway, this guy has a green gardening glove on. He's trying to open walnuts. He keeps destroying them. It is James's birthday. Oh, you were doing it now?
I can start over. You started talking, so I hit start.
You know what? Let's do it.
All right. Three, two, one.
Right. Freddy's trying to open walnuts. He keeps destroying them. It's James's birthday. James wants to know about the story about the glove. Freddy tells the story of his glove as a present. After a night at the pub, Freddy decided he should be using his life to help people. Taking an alley shortcut, he childishly jumped on a stack of boxes and was suddenly taken to the fireman, who instructs him to go to the hardware store and get a single glove where a job's worth. Tried to keep him from getting it. After getting tackled, he punched the clerk with his glove and may have snapped his Gregory Peckneck.
Gregory Peckneck. It was a good try, Dave.
I really tried it.
That was the 20-second challenge where we try to explain a scene in 20 seconds.
And Dave totally botched it. He botched it.
I biffed it.
But it's a lot. There's a lot in the scene.
There is.
But hey, there's a lot.
That's why it's a challenge.
It's long.
Yeah.
Even with my condensed version of these events and rattling them off like an auctioneer, I couldn't do it in 20 seconds.
You couldn't even get halfway through it.
There's too much here.
Yeah.
There's too much here.
This is James Hurley, Tyler's favorite character.
It's my birthday.
or Jimmy, we can call him from here on out.
Oh, Jimmy?
God. Jimmy Hurley.
Jimmy James.
Didn't want to make a note about Freddy quick. Freddy Sykes.
Okay.
It's also the name of the one.
Freddy Quick.
Freddy Sykes is the name of the one-armed man in the movie version, The Fugitive. The detective in the TV series, The Fugitive, was Philip Gerard.
That's right.
Oh, PJ.
Just a fun fact about.
That is a fun fact.
And we saw, it's not the first time we've seen Freddy in the series.
What?
Yep, he walks into the roadhouse in part 2 with James.
That's right.
Beers, and he's got his green glove. Again, something on like my first rewatch back after like finishing the turn, I was like, there he is. He's right there.
Completely missed it. Yeah. Completely missed it.
Because they say something, they do exchange words. Like when they walk in, he's just like, oh, it's a great place or something. Just something small, you know, and they go order drinks. But yeah, he's right there with him.
Wow.
Yeah, so he's got the screen glove. Mm-hmm. The fireman, who we just learned about being called the fireman. So, of course, we get this scene right here.
Right,
yeah.
Instructed him to get.
It would have made sense to hear this story and then learn that the giant is the fireman.
Right. Yeah, I know that would have been cool, actually, to get the reveal after. Mm-hmm. Yeah, have him reversed. Man, yeah. That would have been good.
Calls himself the fireman.
Yeah.
And then,
I am the fireman. That would have been cool, actually. Yeah.
I was like, oh.
There are some word associations in part 1. Just, again, could be like a dreamlike thing. I don't know, but Armstrong. The dog was Armstrong, and his owner was Marjorie Green. But no, Armstrong and the owner being green, mm-hmm. I thought that was very interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Please. Okay.
James goes inside to check on something.
To check the furnaces, yeah.
The sound, the humming noise that we've heard.
Yes. Where have I heard it?
With Beverly and Ben Horn.
In the, mm-hmm. Okay.
Because mm-hmm. they're like, they so wanted them to go.
And this is at the Great Northern as well.
Yeah, so they're sitting like, yeah, loading dock. Because they're the Great Northern security team. James Hurley is now working.
Who's just there for deliveries of what? Toiletries?
Don't know. It is interesting, yeah, that this is James' career.
Yeah. You know. After the accident.
Right.
Because I'm sure there's no way anybody caught in the rambling what the story is of this glove. Freddy has this glove he can't take off. Otherwise, his arm just starts bleeding or something. Super weird. It's like it's a part of him now. He got it.
It's a part of me now.
It's good.
That's really good.
Good Freddy, yeah. Got our Freddy guy.
Yeah, his story is he had been at the pub, decided he needed to do more with his life, start helping people. He takes a shortcut through an alley, sees a stack of boxes, and like kids do, saw a stack of boxes and said, I'm going to jump on that.
Yeah.
And apparently when he did that, he got sucked into the White Lodge, met the fireman, who told him to go and get a single glove from a hardware store that was in a open pack, put it on, and it would give him the strength of a pile driver or jackhammer?
Probably both.
Pile hammer.
Pile hammer.
Jack driver.
I do love all these little details because I can picture all of this. Even him going in the store,
bouncing through
the alley. I'm like, yep, I see it.
Yeah, you can really picture it really well.
You can picture it really well, yeah.
But he gets the strength of a pile driver is what he says. Like gets into it with what he calls a job's worth at the hardware store. He's like, I can't let you have that. It's more than my job's worth.
Good deal. That's true. It's true.
So he steals this single glove because the guy won't let him buy it. He gets tackled in the parking lot, and when Freddy punches the guy, he snaps his Gregory.
Yes.
He says in the story. It's a rhyming slang, Gregory Peck, neck.
Yes.
And he remembers after the fact that he had asked the fireman, why me? And he said, why not you? And then he went to get a ticket to go to Twin Peaks, like he was told to do by the fireman, and the ticket had already been bought for him.
Weird.
So now here he is.
Here he is.
Fred's a prince.
But yeah, then the last order of the night before going to the roadhouse is they need to check the furnaces.
Yeah.
He didn't check it real good.
Didn't. Here's the familiar sound.
Yes.
I guess that belongs to the Great Northern, but the scene ends on a doorknob.
On a doorknob, yes.
Not Why? A doorknob.
I know, but still.
Now, in the international pilot, this would have been where they found Bob.
True.
Technically, in the basement of the Great Northern.
That's true.
Yeah.
But
and Mike.
Right. Seemingly nothing happens down
Ask
here.
Ask him for nickels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just kind of wanders through following this noise, and it zooms in on a door. We don't open the door. We don't see anything behind the door. The scene just ends there.
Let's hit up probably the best part of the episode.
Yeah.
Elk's Point.
Elk's Point Bar.
Elk's Point Bar number 9, because 1 through 8 were at capacity.
May not be the same
place. She'd been walking for a while.
That's true. May not be the same place, but if you remember, I think it's at the beginning of season 2. When they're like recounting all the events of the night before to Cooper, you know, after he's been shot, when they're in the hospital, doesn't like, I think Doc Hayward says something like, this is the most things that's happened since the Elks fire of 59 or something like that.
And
is that this bar? This bar caught fire back in the day, maybe, perhaps?
Maybe this the
is
first the ni- eight
this
burned
is the
ninth,
down. Yeah, I was going to say, this is the ninth one.
It just keeps burning down.
Well, we see what goes down here, so.
This is probably not too out of character, according to the bartender's reaction.
Yeah.
But Sarah Palmer.
I love this shot when she walks in. Mm-hmm. You see the shot of the pool hall, and this Jay from Jane's Island Bob, like, has gum on his shoe. And he just, like, stops. And
yeah, it's true. He does.
Okay. It's so weird.
I guess Sarah ran out of all of her Bloody Mary mix at home.
Out of vodka, out of
mix. That last scene in the last episode where she's trying to...
Grocery store's closed.
Yep.
But
she takes a nice seat at the bar.
And seat at the bar, orders a Bloody Mary. I note an unsavory gentleman harasses her.
I had it down as a pre-Alpha Leo Johnson.
you buy your Truck U shirt yet?
Not yet.
Man, this guy exists.
Yeah, he does.
When she turns him down, he's obviously harassing and advancing on her. She turns him down and he turns extremely vulgar.
Oh, yeah. She even said immediately.
She even said, please.
Yeah, and it's like a very, like, please. Yeah.
This dude, like, this dude
leave
sucks.
Me alone. Having a bad time.
Yeah.
Liquor store's closed.
I cannot repeat.
No.
99.7% of the things he says.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's awful.
But he sits down
repeat,
next to her.
How about?
She wants him to leave. He says it's a free country and then elaborates on
that
country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitively calling her the C word and
other things.
Other hateful, things.
Homophobic and bigotous things.
It's awful.
Really, really rough. Yeah.
He's just.
Again, another moment where when what happens, I stand up and clap.
Yeah.
Because I was like, thank you.
Like, how many people wish they could have done this in the past?
Well, it's funny.
Can't tell you how many times I wanted to take my face off and just rip someone's throat out.
While he's describing certain things, she's like, I'll eat you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's, what?
And then she peels her face off.
Yep. Yeah. Well, peel is generous because she really
opens her
face
it door.
Off like it's an Iron Man helmet. Just
and not our first time we've seen this.
Nope. Yeah. Laura did this too.
Yeah, in the
That's
red
That's right.
Room.
That's right.
Different shades of light, though. Laura's was a white light.
Well, this had, was this the Traylan hand?
Is
this?
Yeah.
So a few things happen here.
Yeah.
She takes off her face, and there's, first of all, it's just a swirling black void behind her face. Then there's this, like,
so again, opposite
needle.
Of Laura, yeah, being the white light. This is a very dark hole, black hole. Yes.
There's this, like, bird beak needle that kind of juts out a few times after that. A hand with a decayed third finger rises up.
Spirit finger?
In the void. Yeah, the one that was connected to
was
spirituality.
I thought it was the pointer.
I don't remember. I'll have to look back.
See. It's...
It's very...
You're a very...
I guess it depends on which way the...
Which way you start.
Which way the hand was facing.
Depends how you go.
Depends how you go.
But I just... I guess I assumed it was the...
I did too.
Spiritual
the ring
finger.
Finger.
And so that appears... And then the smile from Laura's photo.
Laura's homecoming smile.
Yeah.
Kind of fades into view. And she asks him a fair question. Do you really want to fuck with this?
No.
Had I been this man, I would have put my hands up and said, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm good.
Would have ran away.
Yeah.
But there's no time.
No.
Because he's getting his throat ripped out.
Yeah. Instantaneous.
Yeah.
Just split second, chomp of the neck, blows his throat out.
Yeah.
And he just falls on the ground. Sarah freaks out. The bartender asks what happened. He just fell.
He just fell. Yeah, this is probably my line.
Do it, yeah.
What, with half his neck gone?
What happened?
He just fell over. I don't know.
What, with half his neck missing?
He's fine.
Very good.
So this is... Total confirmation, she is the frog moth, 100%. There are no more questions.
Well, I mean, the pointy makes sense because it has, the frog thing has a point.
So, and, that mystery is solved.
Jumping Man also has a nose that looks like this thing.
I don't care.
To the roadhouse.
Yeah. To the roadhouse.
I did have down that Sarah Palmer is fucking scary. And no wonder Laura wanted out so bad.
With parents like these, who needs demonic possession?
Get me out of here. But yes, to the roadhouse.
To the roadhouse.
For our latest episode of Invitation to Love 2.0, taking place in the roadhouse booths.
Booths.
Does seem like that's kind of what's going on. There's always something separate and apart happening, or is it all connected? Always something separate happening in a booth at the roadhouse.
Cheap plug for a John Bernardi article about all of it.
Is that what it's called? Or it's just
25YL. Go look up the Roadhouse article by John Bernardi. It's not exactly called that, but it's a good read.
But it's on there.
You'll know the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, but two girls sit across from each other. Apparently one has some sort of history of theft.
Yeah, she stole. I don't know if she stole this sweater from Paula or if it's just Paula's sweater that she is wearing.
Well, she's been beefing with Paula. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of them is David Lynch's wife, too.
I would assume it's the one asking the questions.
Yes, the one asking the questions.
Oh, she's the wife?
Mm-hmm.
If she's seen Billy.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we get this other girl's name?
Neither one of their names are said, but they are credited.
Oh, yeah. Paula is the only, and she's not present. Yes. She asks of course. If she's seen Billy. And then we hear a crazy story about the last time she saw Billy.
Which this is where it brings you to making you think that the guy in the cell is
Billy. It's got
to
be Billy.
It's got to be Billy.
The story is he was spotted outside, scared them for looking so crazy. Came in with his face busted up, his mouth bleeding. He runs it under the sink and it never stops bleeding. Then he runs out again. And this
Did
guy
he
also
t-
has
ties a bandage to his face. That wasn't in the story.
Wasn't in the story, but he may have. He may have done that on the quick. We also find out that the girl recounting the story's mother, Tina, has a history with Billy. We've heard this name via Charlie's phone conversation.
This is where I want to point out, because she asks what her name is, and after she says Tina, we get a very ominous tone that just suddenly comes in, like supposed to trigger something in you. Like, what?
And it did.
Yeah.
What? Tina.
So yeah, this is just drawing connections back to part 12 with the Audrey Horns and Charlie scene.
Fun note, one of the actresses is Shane Lynch, daughter of Kelly Lynch, who played Doc in, wait for it, Roadhouse.
What?
Yep.
Wow.
That's a fun connection.
And we're played out to Wild Wild West by Lissy.
Lissy! As the MC
puts it, yeah.
Lissy!
That's right. Yeah, it's a great song.
This song slaps.
She's awesome.
What drives me crazy is that the movements of her mouth as she's performing do not match the track whatsoever.
This is, was probably the most one performance you could tell as far as like from a lip sync standpoint that these weren't played, or if they were played live, they didn't. I mean, I assume they just played it to the song because they shot all these Roadhouse performances in a day.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, I don't know. You're right though. This was the only one where I could really tell, like, oh yeah, she's singing it like she would sing it live.
Yeah. And what a bummer, because I feel like they're killing it.
Yeah, they are totally killing it. I wish I could hear that.
Yeah, I want to hear that version.
Yeah, not the studio version. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Lissy's great.
Yeah, great song. which one of these ladies is David Lynch's wife? Because I researched it and it didn't seem like they were related.
Yeah, they are right here. Do you want to come look?
Yeah, I'll take a look.
Sophie.
Okay, see, she's not the one I looked up.
Gotcha. That would make sense then.
So I guess it's just coincidental that the other one is Shane Lynch.
Right, yeah.
Huh.
Yep. Just a coincidence.
Wacky. Because that's so funny, because she's the one I looked up and saw that her last name was Lynch. I was going to look up the other lady, but then I was like, oh, I'm going to
deep. That's a good point, actually.
Like, I'm going to deep dive on this. I was like, she's got to be relation, right? Nope. But.
I did that too, but didn't deep dive as far as you with the Roadhouse thing. That's awesome.
Yeah, because of that, I found out that she was the daughter of somebody who was in the movie Roadhouse.
That's pretty
funny. Which is really, really funny.
Yeah. Final thoughts, Dave?
Great. Confusing. Couple parts. But overall, it's just rock solid. It's just very good reveals, very good beats. And I just really, really like it. Tyler?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. It was good. A lot of stuff actually happened.
Yes, very eventful.
Which is very rare in Twin Peaks.
I've heard this exact sentence in a recent edit.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's still true.
Yep, so holds up.
Which I feel like it makes it not true.
I didn't say it has never happened. I said it's rare.
You said that in the previous episode, you said it's rare, which rarely happens.
It is rare.
James Hurley.
Who cares? Don't care about your birthday. Even though Freddie calls it a real occasion.
It's a real occasion.
This is a real occasion. Yeah. No thanks.
Freddie seems like a really sweet
That's
kid.
Definitely going to impact my rating.
Interesting. Mm. It's not going to affect mine. We got Sarah fucking Palmer. We got Philip fucking Jeffries. We got Monica fucking Bellucci. This episode rules. Just a tease from a score. It's awesome. No, this episode is top to bottom so much fun. The Andy going up into the vortex blows my mind.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's good. A lot of fun. And it wouldn't be Twin Peaks if I didn't have some questions for you fellas.
Sure.
Let's go to some unsolved mysteries.
Unsolved mysteries.
How did Diane's sister, Janie E., meet and marry the Dale Cooper tulpa, Dougie Jones?
Look, she was a single mother.
Christian Mingle.
Fell on some hard times, had a few dollars to her name, tried to make $5 into $5,000, goes to the casino, sits down next to a gentleman at the One-Armed Bandits. Guy's name's Paul. He says, "Hi, my name's Paul." She says, "I don't want to talk to you." He says some unsavory things to her. She takes her face off. She eats him. She eats his head.
Janie?
Yeah, Janie does. Then another guy comes over and says, "Whoa, you just ate that guy's head." She's like, "Weird, right?" They go and get coffee together. That guy's name is Ted. Turns out that's a lie. Guy's name's Dougie. She loves that.
What the hell?
Is there a spirit that is possessing Sarah Palmer?
No, that's just her face.
She had really bad acne as a child.
Who is the dreamer?
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Unsolved mysteries.
Great.
All right.
Solved that.
Yeah, you did. You did. And
where are we?
Oh, this looks a lot like the Reddit room.
Reddit room. Hit me with those hip comments.
Oh, these are so hip.
Hip so, quip.
For the Reddit room, we go to Reddit to get some reactions from the original airing of the series. Jason Stakeums, which might be my favorite user handle I've ever seen, said, "Best confirmation so far that the giant is really in the White Lodge. There's a pool of golden liquid by the portal area near Jackrabbit's Palace to contrast with the pool of oil in Glastonbury Grove." So I'd made my notes before I even went to Reddit, but I was just very happy to see that other people also kind of locked in their minds that this has got to be the White Lodge. Even though it's never said explicitly, I feel like the clues are there to make this that.
The clues are.
It there.
Yeah, I like that a lot too.
So also, Jab2395 asked, "Did anyone else get the impression that the fireman was assembling some sort of super team in Twin Peaks by having both the guy with the rubber glove and Nido come to Twin Peaks?"
The Avengers of
yeah, like the Twin Peaks Avengers. Which I really like that idea too. Like, it just, if that's the case, then like something big is coming. Like, it's all building up to something. Our end game, if you will.
It's all part of the plan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, and you look at it and you kind of see these players being put into place at the right time, in the right place, to converge on something big. So you know something's coming. That's very cool. And the Brett Manist, responding to that, said he had the same feeling when Frank, Hawk, Bobby, and Andy a bit later were fast-walking around Jackrabbit's Palace like the woodsmen. "They're the good woodsmen," I yelled.
The goodsmen.
Oh,
like the true men.
The true men, yeah.
Yep. Oh, and then One Punch Man shows up and seals the deal.
Actually, I like that a lot. Because it's true. Like, the comparison's there of just seeing, you know, the woodsmen fading in and out and stuff, too. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. That's a nice visual connection.
Is that a foreshadowing to them being some sort of spiritual players?
For those of you who don't know.
There it is.
And I think that's all the room has to say for the moment, so we can probably step out.
Bye.
All right. See ya.
It's time, fellas. We must rate it. On a scale of 1 to 5 James Hurley foreheads, in a segment we like to call...
Talking Jimmies.
Talking foreheads.
It's my birthday today.
Is that right? Well, happy birthday, Jimmy. This is a real occasion.
I'll go first.
Do it.
This episode kicks ass. I could have kicked 0.5 more ass for me, but I'm going to give it
generous
4.5 Jimmies.
Ooh.
Sarah frickin' Palmer, Philip frickin' Jeffries, Monica frickin' Bellucci, 5 frickin' Jimmies.
Just 5.
I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to give it to you straight.
Harriet Hayward style, baby.
This episode was pretty all right. So, guess what, guys? We're going with 1, 2, 3.
What's going to be?
What's going to be?
4.5.
Nice.
And a half.
You'll love to see it.
That's talking Jimmy's, babe.
Talking foreheads.
What did we miss? Reach out to us at talkingbackwardspod@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram at talkingbackwardspod. Patrick?
You can find us over on Twitter at talkingbackward.
Tyler?
Anchor.fm/talkingbackwards.
That's our home base. Also, if you find it in your heart and you want to get more stuff, visit patreon.com/talkingbackwards. Lots of goodies, lots of rewards for different tiers.
Including an Egg Devler shout out from the Egg Devler himself. You got any?
You know I do. Let's hear them. I am the Egg Devler, here to shout out to some people. So let me get right down to it. My first shout out is for Jeff Forsythe. Thank you so much for the support. It just means the world to Patrick and Dave. Me too, I guess. My second shout out is to the delectable Landon Lechner. I am so honored that you decided to support me as a person. Patrick and Dave are just riding my coattails everywhere. So, thanks for the support. These have been your Egg Devler shoutouts. If you, or anybody watching, or anybody dead or alive, wants an Egg Devler shoutout, please head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/talkingbackwards, and you could get your very own Egg Devler shout out from me, not in the woods. Do it today.
That's great, Tyler. Thanks for those sweet shout outs.
We'll catch you guys next time for part 17.
Nope.
Nope. 15. Part 15. I just watched 16 last.
I'm leaving that.
At least your notes weren't 16.
Yeah, that would have been confusing.